Well, good morning, brothers and sisters and young people. It's really good to be back here at Study Week again. I have many fond memories of coming to this place. Haven't been here in many years. I feature on sort of the deep archives of that photo board. That's where you'll find me. You won't find me on this close end. But it's just great to be back here and take in a little bit of Study Week again. Just wondering if I have a glass of water. Sorry. Let's continue. Now, I want to focus a little bit on our theme this week, which is, you know, searching for a city. This morning is an exhortation. And the Bible contrasts two great cities, doesn't it? Talks about two cities. You know, it talks about them in different ways. You know, sometimes they're identified as different cities, but they both stand for exactly the same thing. Those cities are Babylon and New Jerusalem that we just read about in Revelation chapter 21. They both stand for different things. And what I want to do as far as an exhortation this morning is for us to ask the question, and really at the start of this week, which city are we focused on? Which city are we focused on in our lives? And I just want to explore that idea this morning by way of exhortation. And if we come to where the quote is drawn from in Hebrews chapter 11, and I promised Des that I wouldn't mention Abraham this morning, and here I am mentioning Abraham straight away. In Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 10, this is what it says, and this is where our theme is drawn from for the week. It says, "For he looked for a city which hath foundations, whose builder and maker is God." Now that word "looked" there actually gives the idea of waiting. So he waited for a city in the future. That's what this man Abraham did. The reward was not now, was it? Otherwise he would have looked for something now. He waited for something in the future. And he built on that foundation, it says now. A city that hath foundations. And a foundation is a part of the building that you can't really see. And the builder and the maker of that city was God. Thank you very much. I might need all of that jug and that. I doubt I'll be pouring from that jug. As I was thinking about this exhortation, I was thinking about great cities in the world. And so some of us might have been to some of those great cities in the world. And when I think about great cities in the world, I think of London, New York, Paris. It pains me to say it, but Sydney. Melbourne would be another one. Of course, wouldn't it? And when we go to these places, it's all about what we can see, isn't it? It's all about a building or something we go to see. You know, we go to see, you know, the Eiffel Tower or the Tower of London or Big Ben or the Sydney Opera House. That's what people would come all the way overseas, just to see this great building standing before them. Or if you went to Melbourne, you'd see the great Art Spire on the on that Melbourne Arts Centre, a great icon of the world. So people to go to see these visual things, don't they? And that's what cities try to do. They try to create these landmarks that we identify with, that those cities are known by. And it's like a constant race, isn't it, in the world, to build the tallest building. You know, I think the tallest building is now being built in some far-off Arab place that no one's ever heard of, but they'd hope to draw people just to see that tallest building in the world. And what these places are, they're all about what we can see, aren't they? Now, I was thinking of that in contrast to a place like this. What do we come here for? Well, we don't necessarily come here for a building that we can see, do we? It's not really that glamorous a place. I know, look, I've prepared these thoughts before they've put the en suites and everything in. They're good, but it's still not that glamorous a place, is it? We're not coming here because it's a building that we can see. We're not coming here necessarily for that visual things. We're not coming here necessarily even for the food. Even though I hope the cooks are not in here this morning, but, you know, we're not coming here for gourmet food, are we? I've been in that kitchen once and I saw there was a cricket bat in there and it wasn't used for playing cricket. It was used for stirring soup or something. So we don't come here for food, do we? But there's something amazing about coming to this place, isn't it? I remember coming here a couple of years ago with Scott and Hannah and just touring around Rathmines. You know, if I brought someone from work here to Rathmines, I don't think they'd see the same fascination as what I'd see with it. Because I have so many memories here. Because the things that I experience here is coming close to God. And a group of people who feel the same way about it. That's what it's all about, isn't it? It's not about visual things. It's about coming close to God. It's about reminding each other that it's not about visual things in this life. It's all about focusing on the future and encouraging each other to wait for that future. Because that's sometimes the biggest challenge, isn't it? Waiting for that future like Abraham did. And these two cities, when we look at them in the Bible, they focus upon these two things. Babylon. You know, Babylon's a very ancient city in the Bible. It's right back in Genesis chapter 10. We won't go there. But it's a very ancient place. It's almost always been around in human history. And it's always about visible things. It's always about stuff. You know, the Tower of Babel. The big golden image that Nebuchadnezzar set up. All the treasure and all the things, the stuff that were associated with those cities. And it gives this illusion of greatness, you know, by people looking at these buildings because of all the stuff that they can see and because of all the stuff that it offers them now. And that culture is visible in our society today, isn't it? Just by looking at what great cities stand for. They stand for things that can be seen. But God says that city has no foundation. Its architect or its designer and its builder is man. And it builds all this stuff that one day is just going to come crashing down. And opposed to that, we have New Jerusalem. And when we first read about New Jerusalem in the Bible, it says that this place, and we read about it in Salem in the life of Abraham that you'll read this week, it says this place possesses heaven and earth, unlike that other city. And it's not about visible things, is it? It's about tents. It's about people. It's about character. It's about the invisible things that are inside you, in your heart. That's what it's all about. And it has an immovable foundation. And its architect, its designer, the way it was all thought up about, and its builder is God. And it says that this city is lasting, it's eternal. And you know, Babylon is built on this, on an illusion, on a lie. It's like a cheap substitute. You know, when you read through the Bible, it tries to be all the things that New Jerusalem are, but it's a real cheap substitute that just doesn't really last. And I was thinking about cheap substitutes, and you may have gone to a market at one point and brought something fake. That's a cheap substitute, isn't it? There's a place in Melbourne called the Caravan Market. And if you want a fake cheap gear with fake logos and stuff on it, that's where you go. And no doubt people have been to markets all around the world and brought, you know, fake cheap gear. I remember on the Israel trip, I brought it was a fake Puma t-shirt. It actually said Pumba instead of Puma. So it was a pretty bad fake anyway. But the first time I washed it, it came out of the wash and it was about this big. So fake stuff just doesn't last, does it? And that's what Babylon's like. It's like an illusion. It's like a cheap substitute for the real thing. It creates a permanence in our minds that does not exist because it has no foundation, as we've seen. And you can trace this thinking, this illusion, right back to Genesis chapter 3. Come back there now. And these are very familiar words to us, Genesis chapter 3. Just read about what this city's built upon. It's built upon an illusion. Genesis chapter 3, and we'll just read from verse 3. As I said, these are familiar words. This is what Eve said. But of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God hath said, ye shall not eat of it, neither shall ye touch it, lest ye die. And the serpent said unto the woman, ye won't surely die. For God doth know that in the day that ye eat thereof, then your eyes shall be opened, and ye shall be as gods, knowing good and evil. You know, there was an illusion in this way of thinking, wasn't there? The illusion was, you won't die. There's a permanence about what the serpent said. You'll be like gods, knowing good and evil. You'll just get all that God was giving you anyway. And the thinking behind that is, you don't need God because you can just get it for yourself. And she focused her eyes, didn't she? She looked upon that. And she focused on the visual. Just like, you know, that's what Babylon stands for, all those visual things. And she forgot completely what God had said. That's what Babylon does. Puts all these illusions, all these visual things before us so that we forget about where our real future is. It gives us all this stuff that creates this illusion that we don't need God and you can just go and get it yourself. And the Tower of Babel and all those other symbols were built on the same things. You can reach up to heaven with this tower that was created, but it's built on an illusion that doesn't last. And it's more than just a literal city, isn't it? Yeah, because if it was a literal city, well, we'd just all move out. We'd move here to study where we can live here together. But it's a way of thinking that permeates into our minds. And just come to Joshua chapter 7, because this shows this way of thinking again. And it's, again, like Genesis chapter 3. Someone focusing on the visual reward. Joshua chapter 7. This is the story of Achan, which is, again, a very well-known story to us all. It's interesting just reading in context to this, verse 24 of Joshua chapter 6, which said, you know, they'd marched around the city had been burnt and destroyed, and it says, and they burnt the city with fire, and all that was therein, only the silver and the gold and the vessels of brass and of iron, they put into the treasury of the house of God. So they're supposed to dedicate all these things, all these treasures, into the house of God. But Achan didn't do that, did he? They just had this famous victory, and in the rubble of that city, a little piece of Babylon is found. A little illusion that deceived him in verse 21 of chapter 7. When I saw among the spoils a goodly Babylonish garment and 200 shekels of silver and a wedge of gold of 50 shekels weight, then I coveted them and took them, and behold, they are hid in the earth in the midst of my tent, and the silver under it. So this little piece of Babylon is found amongst this rubble. And it's merchandise, the merchandise of Babylon. It's not just a city, it's a way of thinking. It's everywhere. It's on offer everywhere, as it was on offer here to Achan. This little piece of Babylon amongst the rubble. And what he saw, he looked at that garment, and it might not have been attractive to us today, this Babylonish garment, but he looked upon that and he was deceived. It was super attractive to him. And he forgot completely what God had said, didn't he? Completely forgot that God said, I want all these stuff, all these things dedicated to me in that temple. And this is the illusion of Babylon, all its stuff. And he was deceived. And you know where it said his reward was? Where did he bury it? In the earth, in the middle of his tent. That's the illusion of Babylon, that those rewards are in the earth. They're not above. That's where the reward is. It's in the earth. And in our mind, we are deceived by the same type of thinking, aren't we? Every week, we struggle with this. And we can think about these things and these stuff that comes into our life that's permanent, but it's just all stuff, isn't it? It's all the stuff of Babylon. And there's a lot of enticements that we face, and money, sport, clothing, people at school, people at work, all these attractive things that present to us in life and say that you can achieve and get to where you want with all this stuff. But that's not what it's all about, is it? Jesus related what we really value in our heart, or he related treasure to what we really value in our heart. He says, where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. The lesson from this little story here is, don't put your treasure in the earth like Achan did. All this stuff, that's where it ends, in the earth. He put it in the earth. And our hearts, of course, they're just ripe for this kind of deception, because we know what it says about the heart in Jeremiah. It says, the heart of man is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? That's what our human heart is like. That's what it tends towards. So, of course, it's going to gravitate to those treasures. Where is our heart? Where is our treasure? Where's the thing that we value the most in life? Is it all the stuff now? Is it all the attractive things in our life? Well, the reward of that is, like Achan, it's in the earth. We need to focus on what's above. It's just a cheap substitute for the real thing. Come to Psalm 119. It talks about the same kind of idea. And what we have to do if we want to focus upon things above, not on things below. Psalm 119, reading from verse 36 and 37, says these words here: incline my heart unto thy testimonies, and not to covetousness, like Achan did. And that word incline means to turn. We're going to turn our heart away from what it naturally does. Because if we don't, we'll just naturally go for all this stuff, won't we? And then it says in verse 37, turn away mine eyes from beholding vanity. And if you've got another translation, there's a lot of good translations for that verse. Another translation I saw was, turn mine eyes away from worthless things. Like Achan, focused upon that garment. Like Eve, focused upon that apple. That's a worthless thing. That's a thing that has no reward. Its reward is in the earth. And what these verses are saying here in Psalm 119 is that we need to change our thinking, don't we? We need to turn our thinking around from what it naturally, from the way in which it'll just naturally go. And in Revelation chapter 18, when it talks about Babylon, and this is related to the life of Abraham, it says, come out of her, my people. Get out. And what it's saying is, get out of that way of thinking, of which you'll just naturally start thinking like. Get out of that way of naturally thinking. And that's what we've got an opportunity to do here at Study Week, isn't it? We have to do that in our daily lives. But an opportunity like Study Week is incredible, because we are here for a whole week with people who love God And we're here for a whole week to be able to focus upon the word. And that can be an incredible strength to us going forward. But in our daily life, it's a challenge as well, isn't it? To get out of that way of thinking. We need to replace that thinking in our mind. And you know, as we consider the Lord Jesus Christ this morning, he was a man who was presented with that same illusion that we are presented with. Come to Luke chapter 4. And you know, when he stood up, right there at the end in that trial, he stood with Pilate and he said to Pilate, "My kingdom's not of this world. If my kingdom was of this world, well, I'd fight. I'd have all these people who'd fight and come and take it now." But he says, "My kingdom is not of this world." Because he focused on a future kingdom, didn't he? He focused on something in the future that wasn't now. But he was presented with an alternative constantly in his life. And this is one particular occasion in his temptation in the wilderness. Luke chapter 4 and verse 5 and 6 says this, "And the devil," or the tempter, "taking him up into a high mountain, showed him all the kingdoms of the world in a moment of time. And the devil said unto him, 'All this power will I give thee, and the glory of them, and that is delivered unto me, and to whomsoever I will, I give it.'" I can give you all this glory. I can give you all this stuff now if you just bow down to me. It's the same promise that Eve was promised with that apple, or Achan was promised with that garment. And Jesus was not deceived by this thinking, was he? He said, "You can have it all." And this is Babylon. You can have all this stuff now if you just bow down to me. Well, how did Jesus overcome that? Well, in his mind, he knew all the buildings that he represented. You know, he told his disciples later, when they sat and looked at the temple, he said, "All these things will be destroyed. There won't be one stone upon another. It'll all come crashing down." He focused upon what God said, didn't he? And he gave an answer in verse 8. "And Jesus answered and said unto him, 'Get thee behind me, Satan, for it is written, Thou shalt worship the Lord thy God, and him only shalt thou serve.'" God rules in heaven. God is the possessor of heaven and earth. And he gives those things to whomsoever he will. And I can't attain to those things through you. It's just an illusion to the real thing. And he constantly battled, and he was constantly presented with that illusion in his life. You know, there was numerous times in John chapter 6, he was, you know, they wanted to make him a king then and there. And you can imagine that he would have been tempted by those things. He had power, he was a popular person. There was all these people around him who were willing to do anything he wanted right then and there. And when he was presented with that, it said he ran up into the mountain and he prayed to God alone. He got back to God's way of thinking and perspective in his life. And when he rode into Jerusalem, yeah, you can imagine the temptation there. They wanted to make him a king right then and there. Yeah, there were all the palm trees down before him, all the people declaring who he was. But he got on that donkey, didn't he, on that ass. And he rode in humility into that city because his kingdom wasn't now. He wasn't going to achieve it now. It was going to be in the future. He focused on the future. He focused upon what God said to him. And he gave that as an answer to people. And what was the thing that he focused on the most? He focused upon other people, didn't he? That's what we're here at Study Week for. It's about people. It's not about buildings and visual things. It's about people and building relationships with God. And God says that one day he'll be exalted for that, won't he? He'll be given a name that is above every name. And that's what's valuable. And that's what he saw. And that's what he constantly kept focused in his mind. So what do we have to do? We obviously can't live perfectly like Jesus Christ? Well, Hebrews 12 and verse 2 says, we look unto Jesus, don't we? We focus upon him and what he did. And we try and put all these other visual things out of our way. We try to take away all those rewards now. And we try and focus upon what he did, that he listened to his Father and what he said. He focused on people. Because people is who's valuable to God. That's what it's all about. It's about building God's name in people. That's what's valuable to God. Not all this other stuff, which just ends up in the earth and ruined. And he focused on the future. That's what we need to do. And we have to build on that foundation now, don't we? And there's many references in the Bible which talk about building on that foundation. And a lot of those references will say that we build on Jesus Christ. We build on the foundation of his thinking, of the way he lived his life. That's the foundation that we build on. Paul talked about that in Ephesians chapter 2. We build on that foundation. Just come to Luke chapter 6. I think it's just over the page. Because this is the parable about the two builders. I think every talk I give, I end up mentioning this parable. The parable of the two builders. And everyone, and this parable shows us that everyone has to build something, don't they? People out in the world, that they're building something. And then there's another people who are building upon something else entirely. And that first, we'll go to the second building first, verse 49. But he that heareth and doeth not is like a man that without a foundation built an house upon the earth, against which the stream did beat vehemently, and immediately it fell, and the ruin of that house was great. Where did he build that house? What was the foundation of that house? Well, it had no foundation, did it? Because it was built upon the earth. That's where it was. The people who build this house put everything into the stuff now, the stuff of Babylon. Might be a beautiful looking house. They might visually have all these incredible things, but it's not built on a foundation. It's just like Achan. He got his reward now, didn't he? He got that garment and buried it in the earth. The second house is different to this. Verse 48. He is like a man which built a house and digged deep and laid the foundation on a rock. And when the flood arose, the stream beat vehemently upon the house and could not shake it, for it was founded upon a rock. This house has a foundation, doesn't it? And what's it built on? It's built on God's character. It's built on the character of the Lord Jesus Christ in the lives of those who build upon that foundation. And that, God says, that has abiding value. When all's said and done, when the end of this whole history of the earth finishes, that is the thing that will still be standing. That is the thing that has abiding value. Putting reward into the future, building for the future, built on things that are lasting, built on people, character, and the hidden person in the heart. You know, King David, in his life, he never got to build the temple, did he? But he prepared all, it says, he prepared all the materials for that temple in his life. He gathered all those materials all ready for Solomon to build that temple. And what it says, and we won't go there to this particular verse, it says that David also built his own wealth and contributed that wealth to that temple, to that future temple. It says that in 1 Chronicles 29 verse 4. He gathered all this gold and all these valuable things and he put it there for that temple in the future. And, you know, just come to 1 Kings chapter 7. Because this is the thing of abiding value. This is the treasure that lasts. First Kings 7 and verse 51. It says, "So was ended all the work that King Solomon made for the house of the Lord. And Solomon brought in the things which David his father had dedicated. Even the silver, the gold, and the vessels did he put among the treasuries of the house of the Lord." So David had long since passed away, hadn't he? But he gathered all this stuff for the future, hadn't he? And where was his treasure? Like Jesus Christ said in that parable, "Don't put your treasure in the earth. Put it in heaven where it doesn't, you know, corrupt, where it doesn't go rusty. Put it into heaven." And that's exactly what David did here. Isn't he? He's long since passed away, and his treasure is put and dedicated amongst the treasures of the house of God. And Achan had done the complete opposite of that, hadn't he? He'd chosen not to dedicate those things into the house of God, but he'd taken that stuff for himself now. That's where we want to put our treasure, into something future. And so which house are we building? We've seen those two houses. Which city are we focusing upon in our life? And you know, in the book of Revelation, God reveals those two cities for what they really are. God sort of takes away the illusion and says, no, this is what Babylon is really like. And this is what New Jerusalem is really like. I want to take away the filter of mankind away from those two pictures. I want to take away the illusion that you're often presented with. And what's the picture of Babylon? Well, it's a harlot woman riding upon a filthy beast, drinking the blood of the saints. Not saving people's lives, destroying people's lives. And she's gathered all this stuff now, hasn't she? And that's what Revelation chapter 18 says. She's gathered all this stuff now to her. And all these people have, you know, she's given her out all this stuff to other people. And everyone's taken that stuff and been taken in the illusion of all that gear. But it's destroyed. It says all the people mourn when all that stuff is destroyed and it comes crashing down. It's like that house in that parable. The fall of it was great when it happens. And because their future is tied up in all that stuff, everything they've put into in life is in that stuff, in that treasure. But it all just disappears in a moment of time and it'll be no longer, will it? You know, Revelation 17 and 18 pass by. And then we have Revelation 19. Can't count. 20, 21. There's no more Babylon, is there? In those places, we're just presented with this new Jerusalem. And just come to Revelation chapter 21. I'm not really going to spend much time here. What's the picture of Revelation chapter 21? It's a beautiful, majestic city with all these jewels and all these gold. And what's the main thing? What's the main thing about this city? Well, it's full of names, isn't it? It's all about people. It's all about a relationship. We're told that she's like a bride in verse 2 that is adorned for her husband. A relationship with God that is finally fulfilled when God brings this city down. And we are that city. That's what God says. The saints are that city. This is what God values. He values people. He values character. He values people who put their treasure into that in their life now. And you know, the illusion is completely gone. It's interesting in verse 24, it says, "The nations of them which are saved shall walk in the light of it, and the kings of the earth do bring their glory and honour unto it." That's when they're bringing their treasures to this city, isn't it? Before they'll just keep all those treasures and all those things for themselves. It's something abiding. Verse 7, he that overcometh shall inherit all things. That's the promise that God has given to us. And the illusion is completely removed in verse 27. The illusion of Babylon, that illusion that deceives us so many times in life. And it says, there shall in no wise enter into it anything that defileth, neither whatsoever worketh abomination or maketh a lie. That illusion is gone. He says the thing that's left is they which are written in the Lamb's book of life. Because that's the abiding thing. That's the abiding character that remains. So we have a choice, don't we? We have Babylon with all its stuff, all its illusion, all the things that we see now that are thrown to us in life. But a terrible ending, isn't it, to that city. We have New Jerusalem, an everlasting name, a name that is written into heaven, like David put his treasure there, an everlasting temple that's not made up of, you know, bricks and mortar or whatever this building's made of. It's made of people. That's the thing that endures. And just come back to Hebrews chapter 11, where we started. You know, there's a man here who had a choice. He could have chosen where to put, he could have chosen to invest in all the stuff in this life. But for Moses, the choice was easy, between Babylon and New Jerusalem. In verse 25 of Hebrews chapter 11, it says this. He chose rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt or Babylon. For he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. You know, he was presented with all that stuff, wasn't he? And the choice for Moses was easy. I'd rather take the reproaches of Christ. I'd rather be of his way of thinking. So as we remember the Lord Jesus Christ this morning, let's remember what he was like. And let's make the choice that he made, the choices that he made in life. And let's focus upon what he focused on. He focused on other people. He focused on what his father said. And he valued that upon any illusion that was presented to him. And most of all, he focused on the future. And so we come here this morning to wash our garments, like in the illusion, in the illustration that's presented to us in Revelation, because we need to do that. We need to wash our garments. But let us this week try and focus more than ever on that future to come. Thank you.